You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are together again this Saturday evening, October the 17th. We are saddled up for the home stretch, and we are riding towards the sound of the guns. 2.5 weeks until Election Day. That's where our focus is going to be between tonight and that fateful evening, the first Tuesday of November, for the next three shows. I'm James Edwards, Keith Alexander. In with me tonight. Keith, it's great to have you back. I know you were doing the Lord's work in Oxford last week. I was up at the hospital with the baby, and we managed to have a show in between it all, thanks to Jared Taylor and Peter Brimelow. But it is great to be back with you tonight especially. So let me turn up your mic. We had it turned off last week with you not here. Now you're ready.
Okay, look, I appreciate it. It's good to be back. I tell you what. What's the Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times. I think we're all living in interesting times right now, particularly here in the U.S. There's an article in this week's New York Times called This is the Last Gasp of White America.
Well, I've got it right here, as it were, Keith. You and I were talking about this at supper just a few minutes ago before we got to the studio. So let's just, you brought it up, and I've got it pulled up for you. Written by Roger Cohen for the New York Times, Trump's last stand for white America. We face a choice, he writes, between a true renewal and a warped fantasy of the past. Donald Trump, the story begins, has been all about the fear of replacement, or as it's sometimes called, the great replacement. His has been the last, I am tempted to say, the last stand of whites against non-whites, of America First nationalists against migrants, of straight people against LGBTQ people, of the gunned up against the unarmed, of Trump against all of those he believes would replace the likes of him. Change can be frightening, which is what the Great Replacement conspiracy theory. Yeah, it's a conspiracy. You see it. You see it. Look at the numbers. Look at the demographic trends.
Yeah, never trust what you hear from a guy named Cohen on something like this, particularly if he works for the New York Times.
He goes on to talk about the replacement of a white French and European order by Muslim hordes in a plot orchestrated by cosmopolitan elites. In Trump's case, read a white America replaced by brown Mexican rapists and black pillagers. Well, you know, obviously this guy's onto something, because if you look at the percentage of the white population of the overall population of America in the 1960s and compare it today, how could you possibly say that those numbers are changing? How could you possibly say the founding stock of this country is being replaced?
And if it's the truth, why is it a conspiracy theory?
And then this thing about the black pillagers. Well, obviously, no. Only, I mean, who are you going to believe, the media or your lying eyes? I mean, obviously, there's been no blacks going out there pillaging or doing anything untoward in America this year. I mean, he writes this as if people can't see for themselves what's going on.
He wants to tell you with one hand that it's a conspiracy theory and therefore probably false, but then on the other hand, he assumes it's correct and is gloating about it.
Well, the New York Times has been on a roll this week. We've been featured in the New York Times many times, and as a matter of fact, ironically enough, one of the best experiences I've had with the media, especially major media like that, was with Serge Kovalevsky of the New York Times. We did a couple, three interviews with him. But in any event, the New York Times editorial board calls Trump this week the greatest threat to American democracy since World War II, and I had a three-word response for that assertion: pot, kettle, black. Keith, between that editorial board calling Trump the greatest threat to American democracy since World War II and that completely obscene op-ed by Roger Cohen, what do you make of it?
Well, it tells you why there's such a crying need to have a conservative network of news commentators and newspapers and radio stations, all of this, because this stuff basically goes unchallenged. They basically have to try, like he said, he sets up, on one hand, it's a conspiracy theory. On the other hand, if it's the truth and he's gloating about it. We haven't, America is strange in this respect. You have two parties. one party has the very tip top of the white population and then the non-whites under that. It's like, and in the middle are the non-elite whites. That's the constituency of the Republicans. The Democrats are the top 1-3% of America's elites, and the people at the bottom. And we are very formidable at the ballot box, these people behind that vote Republican, white non-elites, but because we're not elites, we don't have money. And it's money that makes the mayor go, as they used to say back in the country. And that's why we can't get any traction. That's why people are out here trying their best to find somebody to believe in. That's what Donald Trump is. They try to believe that he is one of them. And in some ways he is. And in other ways he's an elite. But nonetheless, he's our last best hope. And that's what Roger Cohen is pinpointing in his article. And I have to agree with him on that.
Keith, you sure, after being out last week, got in tonight and jumped right out of the frying pan and into the fire. I was actually going to welcome the show and give a little paint a picture of what tonight's show was going to look like, but you hit him with the haymaker early with that New York Times piece, which was certainly something we wanted to cover tonight. But no, let me tell you, folks, what is coming up this evening. So, well, before I do that. Let's quickly go through some mail. We got a few more thank yous we want to lay out there. Ray sends in a letter. Sorry, this is a little late. No, Ray, it's never too late. Everything arrives right on time here at TPC. Thank you for your contribution. Also received contributions a little bit after the third quarter fundraising appeal ended in September, the first few days of October, from Whitestone, New York, Huntington Beach, California, Mineral, Virginia, Arota, Virginia, Atlanta, Georgia, San Saba, Texas, another one from Atlanta, and Chandler, Arizona, amongst others. Thank you all so much for that. I wanted to bring that up specifically in this opening segment to let you know that your gift packages are en route. Some of them have already arrived. Some of them will still be going out on Monday, but they are all in some level of production. So by next week's show, everyone in the United States anyway will have received them. Outside of the United States, may take a few more days. A little late getting them out because of all the excitement last week, of course, what with me having my third child. We were tied up at the hospital for a week, and there was no place I would have been otherwise, and no place I would have rather been. But it did keep us a few days, put us back a few days getting these out. Kelly up in, but they are on their way. Kelly in Nashville, a nice letter. Kelly has been a long time supporter of TPC, and we appreciate her. Look forward to meeting her at one of our future gatherings. Very nice letter here from Jimmy up in Washington State, who was raving, and rightly so, I might add, about the Dino Ryan interview that we had a couple of weeks back. You know, we have had a lot of first-time guests on the show this year, including Dino Ryan, Paul Angel, David Cole, among others, and we are, of course, very excited to always welcome you, welcome new voices to the show and to you. But what we're going to be doing tonight, and we'll pick up with this when we come back, what we're going to be doing tonight is settling in with the tried and true, some of the most regularly featured guests, some of the most favorite guests of our listening audience. We're going to be having micro interviews. We're going to have a lot of guests on, a lot of voices between now and Election Day. We got three shows left before America votes, and we're going to pack them in tight, folks, and it starts this evening. Stay.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history, when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
We've got more content tonight than we can shake a stick at. We're busier than a one-legged man in a
ass-kicking contest.
You know. Anyway, what we're going to be doing, though, tonight, next week, and the following show, which is actually going to be on Halloween night, we got three shows, including tonight, before the election. We are going to be jamming in some of our most frequently appearing guests. Tonight, you're going to hear from Gene Andrews and Dr. Michael Hill, two Lions of the South, as well as Jason Kuna and others. And this is what we're going to be asking each of our guests for the next 3 weeks, and we're going to have as many as we can. Thoughts on how the election is shaping up. What current developments do you find most interesting and why? Who's your horse? What outcome is best for our people right now and why? We're really just going to be focusing on the election, but we're going to be doing it with micro interviews, and we're going to be asking the same questions of each of these guests. And I expect a lot of these guests over the next 3 weeks, a lot of these friends of ours, these colleagues of ours, these fellow warriors, will probably disagree with one another. It's going to be good, though. I think it's going to be an interesting thought experiment to ask so many of our favorite guests the same questions and see what the consensus is amongst our inner circle. So we're going to get into that. But now back to Trump. Keith, I don't want to spend too much time on this. We talked about that New York Times article, but the whole deal with this second stimulus plan. So, of course, as always, both sides are blaming the other as to why they can't get something done before the election. Trump is saying he'll sign another stimulus bill that will send $1,200 to every American taxpayer. But the Democrats are trying to load it up with pork, which I certainly believe. And then now the Senate Republicans are saying, well, we're not going to sign it no matter what you get done. And Pelosi is saying, well, if you just give us all the pork, we'll go along with it. So what's going on there? And are you surprised that they didn't get another stimulus? You know, it's interesting. You can give $500 billion, or at least pledge $500 billion. Nobody really believes this platinum plan for Black America. That's going to be shelved by whoever wins the election, whether it's Biden or Trump. But if you can promise that much for Black America, what about, you know, the rest of the people who pay taxes and, you know, the rest of them? You can't give $1,200 to the working man?
You can't give $12 to the working man. I tell you what, it's just the white working class is the forgotten segment of the electorate. Nobody is making any platinum plan proposals for people like us.
You mean people who voted Republican?
People that voted Republican, people that are not white elites, and they're not bottom of the barrel people either. They're just, you know, honest, good, hardworking folks that pay their bills and raise their families and are the backbone of America. They're not on anybody's special Christmas list this year. Now, what's going to happen, though, you know, the pork that the Democrats are proposing is not normal pork. It's not like a bridge, you know, over to somebody's fancy house or a paved driveway or things like this or, you know, a jobs project for a union that union members are going to benefit from. None of that. The pork they're talking about is basically the stuff that's going to be used to dispossess the white historic nation of America. That's what they want, and thank goodness Trump isn't going along with that. They want basically to have him give money to all of their favorite constituent groups and a lot of things that will work to dispossess people like us. So consequently, I'm glad he's not doing it. He's not going to do it. On the other hand, the Democrats will never cave in because they want to blame anything that is wrong or anything that seems like heartless or non-responsive to the people of America to be laid at Trump's feet. So let's just figure it out. You know, stop worrying about any type of stimulus package being passed before November the 3rd. And the longer that the election result remains in doubt, there will be nothing then either, at least until everything is resolved in favor of the Democrats. And then if it's resolved in favor of Trump, the election, he'll have to do it by executive order because the Democrats are not going to cooperate with anything. We've basically gotten, you know, we've intercepted their messages and whatnot, the right-wing media, and they are not going to, they will not concede anything. Remember, Hillary Clinton came right out and said it. Don't concede Mr. Biden under any circumstances. We don't care if it's a 50-0 whitewashing in the Electoral College. You cannot, because they want to keep, their whole message is that the election of Trump is invalid. And it's going to remain invalid, and don't confuse us with the facts. So that's what all of this is going to be. There's going to be very little real governmental work done, but there are going to be plenty of fireworks between now and the first of the year, beginning on November the 3rd.
Well, we'll see how the election turns out, of course, but and of course, this nomination and apparent soon-to-be confirmation of Amy Comey Barrett is, you know, could factor in if it's a close election. But, you know, we had this report. I was going to get to this last week. We didn't get a chance. But in North Carolina, I mean, this isn't a conspiracy theory. This isn't some pro-Trump blog. It was you know, absolutely reported, even by the liars, that thousands of, quote-unquote, misprinted voter forms were sent out in North Carolina. 11,000 mail-in ballots with the wrong name, address, date of birth, you name it. Now, North Carolina is a swing state, and 11,000 could decide the whole election. I mean, there were several states where he won by just a few thousand votes. I know in Michigan it was 10,000 in 2016. And I mean, what the hell is going on? 11,000 mail-in ballots with the wrong names, date of birth, going out to people who's to say some of these people didn't fill them in and send them back?
Well, the Democrats like this. Well, they say don't get in a peeing contest with a skunk. You'll both wind up stinking and the skunk likes it. Well, that's applicable to – that's a guiding principle of what the Democrats are doing. If something is messed up, for example, in mail-in balloting, of course, that is a holy grail of the Democrats. They always like extended periods of time in which to vote and – mail-in voting, but on the other hand,
voting now by mail in August, and in the early voting where you go to the polls is a month early now.
Right. So if there's anything wrong with the mail-in ballots, guess who you should blame? The people that really love and want mail-in ballots, which are the Democrats. But of course, it will all be blamed on Trump and the Republicans.
All right. Here is another one. So let's just get to the Amy Coney Barrett. We'll just call her Amy Barrett. I don't like three names for a woman, but looks like this has been a relatively non-eventful confirmation process, at least when compared to the confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh. There was a couple of things. I mean, you had Cory Booker come out this week, and of course, ask her, you denounce white supremacy, right? Yeah, yeah, you denounce white supremacy. This phantom menace that doesn't even exist in the real world, but of course she says she does, and he's, oh, thank God, I can't believe the president won't denounce white supremacy. Well, he does it like every day. He does it every day. But anyway, besides that, the thing that stood out to me, she was asked, will your personal views on abortion affect your rulings on the court? To which she said, and maybe she has to say this, she probably has to say this, she said no. But, I mean, for God's sake, we know that that's exactly, you had a funny line about that at dinner. You said, like, the Democrat, they should have said, well, good, so you're not going to do it the way we do it then. You're because right. Exactly what they do. They go in with their biases, and then they assign their clerk. They say, clerk, go find me something that can back up my political opinion. And that's how you make law now. You don't interpret the law. You don't read through precedents anymore trying to inform your decision. You go in with your personal political beliefs, and then you find a way to back it up. That's what goes on now.
Well, I was prepared to tell you about my misgivings about Amy Barrett, but one of the things that I do like about Amy Barrett is the position that she takes regarding, she is from a non-Ivy League law school, Notre Dame. That's kind of the northern equivalent of Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt would be the equivalent of Notre Dame in the south. Notre Dame would be the equivalent of Vanderbilt Law School in the north. We've got somebody who's not from the normal group that we get on this type of thing. And that's a thawing of the iceberg, and we need more of that.
We'll be back. Much more odds and ends, news tidbits that we're covering this first hour before we turn it over to a panel of great guests. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump with the first of two campaign stops on Saturday, the president in Muskegon, Michigan.
One of the most sinister weapons of the extreme left culture is a thing called cancel or cancel culture. They want to cancel our entire heritage. If you do not repeat each and every one of their lies, you will be banned, censored. Big tech titans, what they do, they harass, they expel, they fire you from your job or denied the chance to earn a living.
President Trump with another rally in Janesville, Wisconsin, then heading to Las Vegas. Meanwhile, former Vice President Joe Biden has nothing on his schedule for Saturday, but will be in North Carolina on Sunday. More news online at usaradio.com. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-460-1663. That's 1-800-460-1663. Again, 1-800-460-1663.
Americans are taking advantage of multiple ways to vote early in the general election at an incredible pace.
A record number of Americans are taking advantage of opportunities to vote before Election Day. According to new numbers compiled by the U.S. Elections Project, nearly 21 million Americans have already cast their ballot, which is already 15% of the total votes cast in 2016. Experts say this could be the start of a record number of votes cast and the highest turnout percentage for a presidential election since 1908. The data shows that Democrats are outvoting Republicans at the moment, outpacing them by nearly 2-1. But those numbers are expected to even out, as Republicans are expected to show up in bigger numbers on Election Day proper. For USA Radio News, I'm Dan Naraki.
Vice presidential nominee Senator Kamala Harris is resuming in-person campaign events on Monday by traveling to Florida during its first day of in-person voting. The announcement comes after Harris suspended in-person events following the news that campaign staffers tested positive for COVID-19. USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, while we're on the topic of Amy Barrett, I know Keith wants to continue talking about this situation for a moment. We actually have two really good comments from listeners, female listeners in our audience. The first one from Wendy in Houston, and then also from Kim in Missouri. And let me first read this email from Wendy in Houston, entitled, "I Mostly Agree." "Dear James, I'm certainly no fan of the mainstream modern feminist movement that promotes abortion and lesbianism or the devaluation of men. I also believe it's not biblically sound for women to be pastors or deacons or to dominate their husbands in the family structure. However, I do find your attitudes toward women often swing too far in the wrong direction, almost to the point that you sometimes sound more like a Muslim than a Christian. On the broadcast of October 10th, you implied that a woman should never speak over a man in any context. I believe this is wrong, as God endowed women with logic, reason, intelligence, and a voice. I believe that women have the same right to speak on matters that affect society as a man does, because we live here too. I can't imagine that you want your daughters to feel that they were born inferior because they were born female any more than you would want them to be ashamed of their white Southern heritage. Certainly a debate stage should be an equal playing field, and both participants should be able to speak without having to automatically defer to the other. I disagree with nearly everything Kamala Harris stands for, but I have no problem with her insisting that she not be interrupted. When it comes to society as a whole, neither sex should speak over the other. Both have legitimate interest and should be heard and work together." That's from Wendy in Houston. So her email to me was entitled, "I Mostly Agree." To her, I would respond, "I mostly agree as well." Here's the thing, though. Firstly, I have a wife. I have now two daughters. Nobody loves women better than me. Nobody loves women better than me. But with regards to this, I don't think, first of all, I don't think Kamala Harris should even be on any sort of debate stage. I don't think, I think we made a bad decision with giving women the vote. My wife doesn't want to vote. She doesn't care to vote. I don't think it's so. Much less allowing them to want or to run for president. So I'll stand by that. I don't care if it sounds outdated. I don't care if I'm living in the past. I think it was a bad move for the country. And I think a lot of women agree with me on that. I know a lot of women agree with me on that. Now, with regard to Kamala Harris, you know, if it's a woman like my wife or presumably you, Wendy, then maybe you have a leg to stand on. But a shrew like Kamala Harris, you only give respect to people who are worthy of receiving respect. There's nothing about Kamala Harris that I've seen that earns her my respect. Therefore, no, it's a bad look to me when she's interrupting Vice President Pence. "I'm speaking, Mr. Vice President. I'm speaking." It just rubbed me the wrong way. I stand by what I said. Now, with regard to Amy Comey Barrett, she had, too, Keith, a comment this week, right along the same vein. As Kim reports, her comment to Ted Cruz this week, "Anything a man can do, a woman can do, only better." So this is what we've got. So this is traditionalism, I guess. Now this is
well, that's the old song from Annie Get Your Gun, you know, where she's saying, "Anything you can do, I can do better." She's updating it for a generation that doesn't know about that particular Broadway play. But Amy Comey Barrett is it's like Coney Island.
Well, that's it. That's the thing. I don't like three names. I mean, if she just had the married name, we wouldn't have to get it confused. We'll just call her Amy Barrett argument's sake.
Well, Amy Barrett and I have a great deal in common. We both went to the same college. It's called Rhodes College now. It's called Southwestern when I went there. She was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of that college. So was I back in the day. Let me tell you, there are a lot of things to like about Amy Barrett, and there are some things to, question as far as I'm concerned. One of the things to like is the fact that she didn't come from the traditional three law schools, Harvard, Yale, and Columbia, the three top Ivies. That's where they love to get their U.S. Supreme Court law clerks. Now, why do they like that? Because all of those people are reliable leftists. If you're not a leftist, you're not going to make top grades if you go to those schools, and if you don't make top grades, you're not going to become a law clerk. Furthermore, truth be known, I would suspect that their thinking is often substituted for the actual judges' thinking in decisions through the years, ever since Brown versus Board of Education. It's been a contest to make law clerking with the Supreme Court an exclusive club for people from those top law schools, occasionally somebody from the University of Chicago. But apparently, nobody from the University of Memphis Law School or University of Mississippi Law School or University of Iowa Law School is going to get a job like that. And we need to open those things up. See, our problem is that Jewish power and influence is in charge of the admissions in all of these Ivy League colleges now. It happened in the 20s, and it's done nothing but get more and more strong through the years. But now the people that we have are not going to schools like that, but we need representation on the Supreme Court, and we need representation in the law clerk ranks of Supreme Court justices. So I'm very glad that Amy Barrett, one, got to be a law clerk for a Supreme Court justice. She was a law clerk for Justice Scalia. On the other hand, I am a little bit leery of, when she said that she heard about George Floyd and she and one of her black daughters cried about this. That doesn't really give, because when the facts came out, it turns out that George Floyd was suffering from an overdose. That's probably what he died from. And one of the symptoms of having that overdose is I can't breathe. So it wasn't Officer Derek Chauvin's knee on his neck that caused him to say, I can't breathe. It was the overdose of fentanyl that he took. But,
And anyone with a modicum of honesty knows that and will admit that.
Yeah,
at this point.
If you've been following current events at all, you know that. And, just like 99% of these so-called race and police incidents involving resisting arrest, that in 99 of those so-called cases, once you look at all the facts, the policeman's exonerated. But she comes in and says, the standard left-wing talking point. Did that really get her any points with the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee or Democrats and liberals everywhere in America? No, it didn't. So stop crying. Stop trying. Don't do that. Don't look weak. It's like when Trump was talking about the Platinum Plan. He looks like a beta male when he does that. All this whining and cringing and, pandering to people, that doesn't work. Just say what your position is. Be like Davy Crockett. I leave these words for others when I'm dead. Be always sure you're right, then go ahead. And don't offer an opinion on something that you haven't fully considered. That would have been the perfect thing for Donald Trump to say about George Floyd, about Breonna Taylor, about any other of these multitude of black, white policemen with a black suspect episodes that are rare as hen's teeth, basically, but you would think that it was a everyday occurrence. There are 10 people like this every day being killed in every major metropolitan area in America, but it's just not the case. The whole thing about Black Lives Matter, if Black Lives really mattered, what would matter is the bumper crop of harvest of black males or black people being killed by young black males with guns. They're not policemen. This is criminality. There's at least 1,000 times more of those deaths than there are police on resisting suspect cases where the suspect dies. But that's something that they don't want to talk about because they cannot blame white people for it. Why is the left-wing media, why is the left-wing party, the Democrats, doing this? Folks, it's as plain as the nose on your face. They are trying to gin up a race war in America. That's what they would like to have come out of a Trump reelection. So you know, you've now been warned.
Well, and Election Day draws ever more near, and this week, instead of having a debate, they wanted to do this Zoom debate, this virtual debate. We talked about that last week. I don't disagree with the president's insistence that that not be the case, and he pulled out of it. Well, then they had dueling town hall debates at the same, I believe it was the same time, certainly the same week anyway, on different networks. Joe Biden, no, it was the same time because they were going up with the poll number, the ratings numbers. Biden and Trump, Trump was on NBC. And we'll talk about that after the break. I would say this, though, about the polls. I think it is probably closer than what the polls show. I think after 4 years of psychological terror inflicted by a corrupt, speak-with-one-voice media, that Trump is probably under-polling because people are wary about voicing their support even to a pollster for fear of retribution. I mean, what?
Well, the left has made him
Black
so toxic.
Lives Matter. I mean, they're burning down cities and everything else, targeting Trump supporters. Hell, for God's sake, Senator Rand Paul got accosted, leaving the got attacked nearly, leaving the Republican National Convention this year in Washington.
And the media is responsible for that type of response. They're the ones that have made
100%.
Trump's name 100%. So toxic that people don't want to own the fact that they're voting for him, but nonetheless, they will and are voting for him.
We will, and so for that reason, I think the polls are closer than the polls show, but we will talk about these two dueling town halls.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine. The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. DefendAPatriot.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, let's talk about these town halls very quickly. I've watched everything that's happened on TV with the debates and with these town halls. I watched, obviously, when I was live with Red Ice, watching in real time and offering commentary in real time for the first presidential debate. I did watch the vice presidential debate. We talked about that on this show, of course. And then I watched both of the presidential town halls, which, you know, the whole thing with these town halls, it's so fake. It's so fake. Do you think that real voters from the street, randomly selected, asking questions that haven't been pre-screened and delivered to them, is really going on here? I mean, you know it's not. You know it's not. So I don't like the town hall setting at all. It's completely inauthentic. But anyway, after watching both of these, you've got this whole thing. I mean, it's playing with kid gloves with Joe Biden, and then Savannah Guthrie, this tart from what is she on the Today Show, going after Trump with hammer and tong. Joe Biden, oh, Mr. Biden, do you like your eggs scrambled or over easy, sir? And whatever he says, it's like the most intelligent answer anybody could have ever come up with. And they just ooh and ah. I mean, completely ridiculous. But Savannah Guthrie, and this goes back to the whole issue of women. You know, it just really rubs me the wrong way. Here's Savannah Guthrie, who was not a peer of Donald Trump, okay, by any standard of measurement. She's not a peer.
Not intellectually.
And she's saying, you're not somebody's crazy uncle who can just retweet whatever. I mean, this is the president of the sitting president of the United States, a man, and this lame brain, never had an original idea in her life, mouthpiece for the establishment news, calling him a crazy uncle. I mean, can you imagine what disrespect? What disrespect? And then it goes on. And this is the thing we were talking about at dinner, Keith. When it comes to an interview with Trump, you never get a real interview. It's either some, you know, backside licking interview from Sean Hannity. I can guarantee you Sean Hannity can tell me what Donald Trump had for lunch any night of the week. That's what he can do. And that's not a real interview. Or you get something like this from the establishment where it's like they make him denounce white supremacy for an hour and a half consecutively, and that's the whole interview. There's no real thoughtful probing interviews. And they got into this thing with QAnon. Will you denounce QAnon? Which, you know, QAnon's ridiculous to me. That there's this intercessor named Q that's working as an intermediary between Trump and his base to defang the deep state and all of this. It's a little out in the high grass, but I'll tell you this. One of the tenets of the whole QAnon movement, which I like Trump, I can echo him in all honesty. I know very little about, but they say Trump's trying to break up this ring of pedophiles that controls Washington in the media. Well, I mean, probably hard to argue that there are certainly a disproportionate amount of pedophiles in Washington in the media. But just like the thing from the New York Times earlier where Cohen, the op-ed
Roger
writer,
Cohen.
Roger Cohen is like trying to dismiss everything that we know to be an absolute fact. Well, on that very town hall with Joe Biden, Joe Biden said with his own mouth that 8-year-olds should be backed by the law to choose what gender they are. Okay, that's child abuse. That is sick beyond measure. That is supposedly the leading contender for the next president of the United States, saying that a child, 8 years old, has the right to consent to what gender they choose to be, and it should be backed by federal law and federal government. Now, if they have the right to consent to that, Keith, what stops them from having the right to consent to carrying on a sexual relationship with a grown person, with a grown man, with a 30-year-old adult, a 50-year-old adult. I mean, that is exactly what QAnon, whatever it is alleging, and Joe Biden is proving it true with his own mouth on a major town hall event. And this, and I'll turn it to you, my friend, but this is the damnedest thing I've ever seen in my life. Just 2 years ago, what was it, 2 years ago? 3 years ago, whenever it was, here's the same media going after Roy Moore for being a man in his late 20s, supposedly dating like a 19-year-old. And yet now it's completely okay for Biden to say an 8-year-old has the right to consent to you know, lopping off his genitals or her genitals or taking these
having sex with an adult,
which is the next step. I mean, he didn't say that, but that's obviously if you have the right to consent to lopping off your genitals, why not have the right to consent to these other relationships? Well, this is what's going on. So these two town halls, what'd you make of it?
Well, the problem is this. If this is the new normal, 8-year-olds can decide for themselves whether they want to have surgery to change their sex, then I'm sorry, they've left me and 99.9% of the American public behind, because people don't believe that. And the fact that these people in the media, like the Savannah Guthries and everyone else that is in the Me Too movement with the furthest, most extreme leftist in America, of course we don't agree with that. And of course Trump doesn't agree with that. But on the other hand, you never hear any of these mainstream media organs like the New York Times or the Washington Post or NBC, CBS, ABC, MSNBC, CNN, whatever, have somebody that says, I really don't think that eight-year-olds ought to be able to assign their sex or reassign themselves sexually. This type of thing is, you know, people wonder what in the world has happened to America. Who is in charge of America? Whoever is in charge of America is, I mean, they're just bat, you know what, crazy. Because this is just, the fact that you're supposed to embrace this as the new normal, that's why Trump got elected in 2016, and that's why he will be reelected if we have a fair vote count on November the 3rd.
And this just goes to show, I think, prove me right in my assumption that these so-called town halls are completely scripted. Now, what are the odds that Joe Biden would get a question from a supposed mother of a transgendered child in his Q&A session, where he takes just a handful of questions from the entire American population in a town hall type setting? Well, that's what happened here in this town hall. VDare's got the article. We had Peter Brimelow on the show last week. Biden, there must be no discrimination against eight-year-olds who decide they are transgender.
Look, how many individual man or women on the street do you think you would have to interview before you would find one person that believed that, particularly one parent that believes that? This is the craziest stuff in the world.
But somehow this woman, a woman of a child who had gone through something like this, gets the microphone in a, you know, off-the-cuff, unscripted town hall, don't you know?
Well, the thing is, if the Democrats are trying to self-sabotage their own presidential nominee, they couldn't have done better than to put those words in Joe Biden's mouth. If Joe Biden believes that, I guarantee you, there are probably, you could fit them in a phone booth, all the people in America that believe like that.
Well, we've got it all right here. I actually retweeted it. We can't read the entire transcript, but here it is. I mean, it's right here. Joe Biden explaining how he would protect the rights of these eight-year-olds to do this to themselves. And anyway, go to
8-year-olds can't even get a tattoo. In fact, I think you have to be either 18 or 21 to get a tattoo.
There you go. I mean, can you imagine allowing an 8-year-old to have a beer or an alcoholic drink, but you can allow them to support them, and it's wrong not to support them?
You can allow them to have their genitals mutilated.
Forever. Forever. You can recover from getting drunk. You cannot recover from that. And I'm not saying you should give a kid a drink. I'm just saying between the two, one's illegal and one's, you know, now supported by the guy who may be the next president. But again, things that out there, it's hard for me to believe that he's leading the way they say that he is. But I'll tell you, you know, for all of Trump's faults, and God knows they're legion, we talk about this, he's up, he's down. But you've got to vote for Trump just to deny the pleasure of the left from their
soon-to-be-claimed
victory.
What do you think the left is doing? You know, why they insist not only that we elect a leftist, but that we elect a leftist that believes that eight-year-olds ought to be able to
self-mutilate
themselves sexually. You know, are they trying to lose this thing? Are they?
I hope. You know, I
tell you what. Anybody, I think I could go through the entire city of Memphis and not find one person that would ascribe to that.
Well, the Republicans would be good to press their advantage on that and make that a focal point of a opposition ad, but they're not going to touch anything that's remotely controversial like that, at least not anymore. 4 years ago, yes, but there was one moment.
That's why we need a new media. We need to have a right-wing media, and until Trump or some of his cronies can get together, pony up the money and do it, we're going to have absurdities like this thrust upon the American people. And the American people, no wonder nobody wants to admit to supporting Trump. If what Biden is saying is mainstream, I mean, we live in la-la land. We live in the craziest place in the world.
There was one moment that was endearing. In the Trump town hall, some woman got up and sheepishly told the president that he looked very handsome when he smiled. And there was just that one moment, the one moment I think in the last 5 years where he got a favorable moment where he could just smile and be genuine. And I think, you know, the media, if they wanted to, they could have presented him as the greatest thing that ever happened to America. Yeah, he's a little bit of a rascal, but my God, he took the reins and he did what was right for America. I mean, the media can absolutely make you or break you. And people are so flimsy and malleable that they will go along with anything. They'll go along with the masks. They'll go along with anything the media tells them. If we had a media that was honest, if we had a media that was righteous, everybody would fall in line, and that's just the way it is. But there was that one moment where Trump smiled, and I was like, you know what? You can see a real person there, you know, instead of this caricature that the media has tried to create over the last 5 years. And it was actually, you know, actually a good moment. It was a moment
that was a good moment. You better have a great self-image and even possibly be narcissistic, because that's the only way you could stay out of the mental hospital if you were on the receiving end of all of this barrage of vitriol that Donald Trump has to take as, you know, his daily bread, basically. Every day, they strive to find some adjective that makes him lower and lower in everybody's estimation.
We got guest after guest after guest in the next hour. In the third hour, we got some more of your listener mail. We got some more articles to cover. And Sam Bushman's back again tonight, so stay tuned.
Right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.